What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to another edition of The Look Ahead, part of the SB Nation NFL show. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera from Niners Nation, and with me, as always, from Blogging the Boys, RJ Ochoa. What's up, RJ?
What's going on, Stats? I'm reinvigorated. Wednesday night's episode of The Challenge on MTV has me feeling the right kind of way. Things broke the way I wanted them to break, and so I'm in the right spirits to talk to you and defend my takes and hear whatever entertaining things you have to offer.
I always have entertaining things to offer. And before we get started, I just want to remind everybody, rate, review, and subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show. If you leave a review, we will read it. I'm just going to pick a random one, RJ. This is totally random. I haven't looked at this ahead of time. This is the first one I see. And it's sure from the Blue Spruce, who says, great slate of shows, but I'm surprised that you haven't realized yet that Rob is the capital T talent and should be the main man on every show. Make it happen. Sincerely, Bobby G. Bobby, I appreciate it. You're 100% right. And the people have spoken, RJ.
Interesting. I know people call you Stats, but your name is Rob, short for Robert, I imagine. Another derivation of that. Bob, Bobby. I mean, just throwing it out here, Stats. It sounds a lot like an alias of yours. What was it, Bobby Green? What was the full name here?
Bobby G.
Bobby G. Okay. It's a really, really convenient for that. It's rather inconspicuous. Look, everybody has multiple devices in their home, Stats. If you wanted to leave a review for yourself, that's fine. I mean, you could have just let us all know. It's cool. You're great. I'm not knocking that. I'm just,
Let me see if I understand this. You think my plan to prop up myself and leave a burner review was to sign the review with my actual name?
Rob Guerrera, Bobby G. I mean, all I can do is connect dots. I mean, the dots are there, This is like that exercise in kindergarten where it's like whatever constellation system and you're just following the dots to connect them. That's what this is. That's Bobby G. That's your new nickname.
Nope, I hate that. So please do not do that. We have a lot to argue over today. We're going to fight over Julian Edelman a little later in the show. But before we do that, we are 2 weeks away from the NFL draft, and we're always looking for ways to make the draft more exciting. And one way to do that is to bet on the draft. And we have plenty of draft props, but we're not going to do it alone. We are very pleased to welcome in Kate Majuk from DraftKings Nation, doing double duty this week on the SB Nation NFL show after hosting the Pupcast yesterday. What is up, Kate?
Oh my gosh. I first need to say, Bobby, love the review. Totally agree. That's really good stuff. Totally innocuous. I love what we were accomplishing there, but I agree. If you have multiple devices in your house, you gotta do that. That's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm excited to bet. I'm betting by proxy, guys. I can't bet the NFL draft in Pennsylvania, and it's probably a good thing because I would bet away all of my money. So this is a fun exercise for me because I get to dive in. There's a lot of really good bets over at DraftKings Sportsbook, and we're going to talk about them. And I'm very excited. But hey, we're 2 weeks away. Two weeks.
What if you used an alias like Catherine M? You know what I mean?
No.
Something. I mean, I'm just, if we're in the mood here today, I mean, that's all I'm saying. It's we can do this.
My high school login name for everything is Katie Pie, because I just thought that was like really fun, but it's with an E-I-G-H-T-Y Pie. I thought I was very clever, but I was not. So maybe that can be my new alias moving forward. And I'm just going to adopt that name here in the professional world of sports journalism. So
Stats, my username for everything at that time was Drummer ROJ because I was on the drum line in high school. And when you're on the drum line in high school, you're obligated to tell everybody that you were on the drum line in high school. So I've accomplished that here today. What was your like general AIM username? Not that Kate's was of a loser variety, but mine was. So like, what was yours of a loser variety?
Mine is the worst. Mine was Little Italy.
So, oh no.
I'm surprised it wasn't Bobby G, but okay.
Yeah, it's not a shining moment in my history, I fully admit.
And well, I graduated to Katy Pie, I was Sunshine Baby 91 with a B-A-B-I-I. So I was a fool at once, and then I graduated and to more grown-up foolishness. So
Katy Pie, all right.
Katy Pie.
There are a whole bunch of people right now asking, what the hell is AIM? But we digress. You can Google it, people, if you don't know. There are a ton. Oh, God. There are a ton of great draft props out there. RJ was a little hesitant to jump in on the props, but like, I am all for it. And let's just start at number three, because that seems to be where the first question is. RJ, I throw it out to you. According to DraftKings, Mac Jones is minus 200 to be the third overall pick, which means you have to bet $200 to win $100. So they really think Mac Jones is going three to the Niners. Are you taking that bet?
Well, I know somebody here on the SB Nation NFL show. It isn't myself. It isn't Pete. It isn't BLG. It isn't Kate. It isn't Kyle. And it isn't Kist that really leans on Vegas's support when it comes to the idea that the San Francisco 49ers are going to have success this coming season. That is, used as the primary point of emphasis by a particular individual who may or may not have gotten the most recent 5-star review. But so in that sense, would I take that? No, because I don't. I'm not like the biggest, draft Nick. I'm fully capable of realizing that other people are far better at grinding tape than I am. However, all of the signs do seem to indicate that that is the direction that the 49ers want to go in. Kate, love having you here. It's great to have a third voice because Stats is always like, I don't know, guys. Vegas believes the Niners are going to win the Super Bowl. And here he is shaking his head at the idea of the 49ers taking Mac Jones. So, Kate, I throw it to you. I do feel like this is more probable than not. Shout out to Tom Brady, of course, at this particular point.
I call BS. I call firm BS.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think this is Vegas is just playing another role in the smokescreens of the NFL draft. Good for Vegas. And you know what? It means the San Francisco 49ers, all of the rumblings that they're putting out there, it's working. That is the point of literally any piece of breaking news or whatever you would like to call it. You believe nothing in these months leading up to the NFL draft because that's the game. It's like the Hunger Games. You need people to take the bets. You need people to take the bait. And if Vegas has Mac Jones at minus 200, I'm absolutely going to say that is a farce. It's 100% Justin Fields.
So this is like Vegas is to the Niners what like the sponsors are to Katniss, like coming in and yes, dropping off like supplies or whatever the case may be. Okay.
I think we should do the whole podcast in this theme, by the way, that just make alliterations to the Hunger Games. I think that would be great.
Do I get to be Stanley Tucci in that? Because he's my favorite part of those movies.
So you're a movie guy, Stats. You haven't read the books.
Reading is overrated.
Okay. Yeah, okay, Stats, that's fine. I suppose this is fair logic. But I don't know. I'm a little hesitant to buy in on Kyle Shanahan as like the great whisperer of all things. So I'm hesitant to buy in that, I honestly believe he's just simply this simplistic, that maybe he really is just that focused at this point. Because generally that can happen, right? Like, when was the last time we were surprised by a team who traded up into the top three or top two at the quarterback they took? Like, the tea leaves are generally somewhat easy to read. Shout out to Professor Trelawney from Harry Potter now. But I mean, either way, I don't know if you guys wanted to go this direction with our fictitious money here, I'm not against it.
Well, let me give you a couple other numbers because the player with the next best odds to be taken third is Justin Fields at plus 150. That means you bet $100 to win 150. Trey Lance is at plus 400 and Zach Wilson is at plus 2000. I think we know it's not going to be Zach Wilson. But here's the thing, RJ. Justin Fields just had a second pro day yesterday where he was running plays specifically from the 49ers playbook. Why is Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and Rich Scangarello, the quarterback's coach, and Adam Peters, the assistant GM, why are they having him do all this if they're taking Mac Jones? They don't have to fool anybody. They're at three. So I don't understand why the 49ers would bother with all this. They're going to have another pro day with Trey Lance next week. What is the point of all this if they're just going to go with Mac?
I think that's what Kate said. I mean, they're trying to throw you off in a number of different directions, right? Like, you know, keep you on your toes. Nothing can be predicted. Nothing can be, you know,
but why?
The truth. Because they're dumb. Like, that's the, you know, like some people make one left. Some people make three rights. And Kyle Shanahan is a three rights kind of guy to go the same direction that everybody just takes one left to go.
That's actually the most beautiful insult. Like, it's the most kind. I don't even know if it's an insult, but I like it. But you know what? Let's just be real here. I mean, does Vegas have a vested interest in going along with the smoke? If everybody lays down $200 on Mac Jones to be that number three overall pick, guess what? I think Vegas is going to walk away pretty happy. Smokescreen.
So here's what I would do. I would lay down money on... Well, who was 150 odds? Was that Justin Fields stats?
Yeah, that was Justin Fields.
I would lay down odds on Justin Fields and Zach Wilson. Just hedge yourself, right? Because, like, what if things get weird? Like, just, you know, protect your interest. Maybe things work out, you know, your way in a number of ways, stats.
Well, that, to me, like, I wouldn't be stunned if Justin Fields went number two. I don't know. Like, we all think it's Zach Wilson. Why? Because the Jets said that Steve Young is kind of plugged in. Like, teams lie all the time. What if Justin Fields went number two? Then you get Zach Wilson potentially at number three at plus 2,000.
Right. This is my genius idea. Why are we not, you know, congratulating me for it?
I refuse to acknowledge that you have any genius ideas.
Well, okay. So what are Zach Wilson? I don't know exactly what you have in front of you, stats. What are Zach Wilson's odds to go number two to the Jets? How about that?
He is minus 2,000 to go number two. So Vegas really thinks he's going to be the pick.
Kate was really shocked by that as her cat jumped up on her. Is it a couch or a table?
My cat is appalled by those odds. That's a little rich. And when I say a little, I mean, that's really, really rich for me. Like, I know during Zach Wilson's pro day, they did come out to say that there was a scout, I believe, that texted somebody that said, yeah, of course, Zach Wilson's going number two. No way he doesn't. But guess what? Like, that was one scout. That was one scout. And I think Justin Fields had just as good a pro day. We didn't have Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers. My cat really wants to be in on this conversation, guys. I'm so sorry.
What's the cat's name?
Kiko, actually, after Kiko Alonso.
Really?
I think we ruined that for Kiko. I don't know who ruined who, but
it was Chip Kelly's fault.
Yeah. But I just think, like, I don't, why are we so sure? I don't really understand why we're so sure. I get why we're so sure about Trevor Lawrence, but everybody else I think has been sort of a wash. And I think Justin Fields, the fact that there's been so much hullabaloo, I think that tells us something, that people want Justin Fields to fall. And that's for a reason.
And if you're feeling lucky, Justin Fields is plus 1600 to go number two. So maybe it's worth throwing, you know, some shekels down on that and taking a flyer on it. Because if it pays off, which it very well could, that's a nice little chunk of change.
Kudos to you, stats, operating in shekels. Big time over there.
That's how we do it over here. All right. So we've kind of talked about number three. At number four, to me, this is where the whole draft, like, anything can happen at number four. The Falcons could take whatever quarterback is left. The Falcons could trade out of that pick. I know there's been a lot of talk about Denver possibly moving up, making a move. But I also think the Falcons could stick there and take any number of players. RJ, I'll ask you first. What do you think is most likely to happen at number four?
I think what's most likely to happen is to make everything about the Dallas Cowboys, which is my job. Dallas Cowboys fans have an easy decision made for them when the Atlanta Falcons take Kyle Pitts. That removes the lure, if you want to call it that. I think there's a lot of logic in them taking Pitts if he falls to 10. But I think Atlanta can't resist. I think Atlanta is, interestingly, kind of in a similar spot to the Cowboys in 2016 when they took Zeke at 4 overall. It does feel like trying to buy time back on Matt Ryan's career, in a sense, and trying to kind of just, you know, keep things moving with that offense. I think it's fair to start contemplating life after Julio, life with Calvin Ridley, life with Kyle Pitts. And so I think that makes sense. I certainly can't knock the strategy of drafting a quarterback, but I wouldn't want, if I was new to the Falcons organization, I would not, like, on day one want, you know, the situation of handling Matt Ryan's departure right away, because that would be tough.
Kate, what do you think happens at number four?
So I'm actually really torn here. I think that there is a reasonable chance that Kyle Pitts could go here at four to the Falcons. I think they like Trey Lance a lot, but again, the only question I have regarding that sort of move, I mean, it would make sense from a standpoint, like, I don't know that Trey Lance would be ready to start immediately. You still have Matt Ryan, but like his contract is loaded with dead money. If you're ready to move on from Matt Ryan, it's going to kill you. Like, in the 2021 season, carries $70 million in dead cap, 2022, $40 million in dead cap. Like, if that's the case, and I mean, it sucks for this new organization that's coming in and they're essentially handcuffed to this quarterback. But I mean, it would have to be a situation where, similar to Jared Goff, like there's basically, you're paying for picks because you're taking on some of that salary, something like that, if they're going to move on. And I don't know if they'd find a partner the way that they did for Jared Goff, because Jared Goff is young and he's got a whole career ahead of him if you could do the right thing. So while I've been leaning Trey Lance, I talked myself out of it. I think they either draft Pitts here or move back just a few spots more, where you know, they just kind of have their pick of offensive weaponry at this point in the draft.
So DraftKings says that Kyle Pitts has the best odds to be the first non-quarterback drafted. He is at plus 125. Penei Sewell is at plus 200. And then Ja'Marr Chase is plus 250. I think it's just as likely we see a non-quarterback there than a QB. We've never had four quarterbacks go with the first four picks in an NFL draft before. And if I'm betting on my money, I don't want to bet against history. I'll let somebody else make their money with a historic event. That's not going to be how I place my money, RJ.
Interesting, because you support the idea that the 49ers can win the Super Bowl with a rookie quarterback, even though that also has literally never happened in the history of the NFL. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't say I would bet on it.
Low blow, man.
Different?
I mean, I don't know. It's just, you know, there's some conflicting ideologies happening here. But I see, like, now I'm, you know, contradicting myself. I don't necessarily buy that just because, like, it's never happened that, like, four quarterbacks going could not happen, because I do think, like, I think there's a level of panic, and this is about a non-Atlanta team just as much as it is about Atlanta. There's a level of panic around, like, we've got to get our guy, we've got to start our rookie contract window, we've got to financially commit ourselves to something. If not, we're just, like, aimlessly wandering here. And so I actually think I've talked myself into the fact that if it's a quarterback, it's a non-Atlanta team. So I guess it is just a matter of, to Kate's point, trading back, which I think is enticing to that point, because maybe this isn't the year you want to take your quarterback if you're Atlanta. But how do you get out of that? If you are Atlanta, you acquire picks. And so that way, if you move on from Matt Ryan in 2022, you have a future 2022 first round or whatever that isn't yours. So you're a little bit more well-stocked in that capacity. And I think that sometimes, like, I think we all develop these, like, biases. Like, we all think, like, Penn State linebackers are really great, and, like, every wide receiver the Steelers draft is going to be awesome. And so, like, a bias in my mind is that the Falcons are always going to take the, like, hot skill position player. And that might be why I've leaned into the Kyle Pitts to Atlanta thing.
Well, I think Kyle Pitts, you look at just, I mean, which of these guys are we most confident is a generational talent? I think it's Pitts, right?
Sure.
And that's what you're looking for, obviously, at number four at the top of the draft. Like, if you get a guy who's just a solid player, that's disappointing when you have a top five pick. You're looking for something more than that. We've talked about four quarterbacks that may go. DraftKings says that the over-under for wide receivers in round one is 4.5. We have seen, I mean, last year's wide receiver class was absolutely loaded. There are a lot of good people in this year's class. Are you going over or under on that bet, Kate?
Oh, I've gone back and forth a million times. I think there are a lot of teams that could use a wide receiver. I went through the list of picks: Miami at 6, Philadelphia at 12, Vegas. I'm still counting them in. I know Henry Ruggs, but I don't think any of us are still on that train. New England, Tennessee, Jets, Baltimore, Green Bay. There are so many teams that can use a wide receiver, but there's also so many teams, really talented wide receivers on the board. I do worry that that's going to push some of these guys down the draft board, but in my head, most likely to go Ja'Marr Chase. I do think Devonta Smith is bound for first round. Of course, Kadarius Toney, I think, is going to be one of those guys, maybe at the late first. Elijah Moore. It's so fringe for me. I'm going to say over just because I think somebody might bite on the athleticism of Rashad Bateman. He's like the tiebreaker for me. He sort of fell off my board a bit when he measured in at 5'7". I have to imagine that, you know, he fell off of plenty of boards at that point, but I think he's going to be the fifth wide receiver, and somebody's going to bite on just the elite athleticism. I'll take the over.
Yeah, I think if I'm caught in the middle, I think leaning in the over direction is probably just, I would rather live on that side. But beyond that, Rashad Bateman has gotten, there's like the handful of dudes who get the like early April push, like national narrative, and that's Rashad Bateman. And it feels like that's enough to kind of carry him over the proverbial goal line in this sense and go in the first round. So shout out to his agent for getting his name out there in the right context. But yeah, stats, we're both taking the over. So if you're not, you lose.
No, I think I got to go over on this. You kind of casually mentioned Elijah Moore, Kate, and I got to tell you, I'm a little worried about your marriage because I host a show with your wife, Michelle, and I don't think she loves anybody as much as she loves Elijah Moore. Like every week we talk about how great he is. I think she thinks he's going in the first round. You throw him in there, like the over looks pretty good to me. Chase is definitely going round one. Waddle, Smith, I think it's an easy over if I throw Elijah Moore in there.
I think Elijah Moore is going to be one of those tipping scale kind of players. My wife and I have talked endlessly about it. To Tennessee all the way, please send him to the Titans. I think that would be a really good fit. But there's just so many, I think, good fits at this point in the draft. I think Devonta Smith, you can be concerned about the weight all you want, but you can't argue with the absolute monstrous production. Jaylen Waddle, worthy of a first round pick. There are all these guys that I do think are elite level athletes. They're going to be really hard to pass up on. And there's just so many teams that do need a wide receiver at this point, and they need one badly.
Yeah. And I think, interestingly, this has taken on a financial outlook of its own. I I know we're talking about first round picks, but I feel like teams think more than ever like, oh, we could just get dudes in the third round and we don't have to pay receivers. Like it is, I don't want to say mimicking the quarterback position in that sense, but like the, you know, again, to make everything about the Cowboys, like Michael Gallup, like no Cowboys fan wants to pay Michael Gallup because we'll just spend another third round pick on a player and find another Michael Gallup and just kind of do this forever. And you draft and pay generational people like CeeDee Lamb, again, to last year's class's point. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these dudes are of that variety. I'm really nervous that Waddle's going to end up on the Giants. That's my personal fear, which sucks.
Do you watch the draft that way? Because I do. Obviously, you know, okay, who's my team picking? But then I'm also hoping for the other teams in my division to screw it up.
Oh, yeah. Like last year, the greatest moment of my draft last year was when the Cowboys took CeeDee Lamb. The second was when the Eagles took Jalen Hurts. I mean, totally, like 100%. And I think it's more interesting in the earlier rounds, obviously. But it's also like last year, the Cowboys traded up with the Eagles when they took Tyler Biadasz in the fourth round. So like things like that do make it a little bit more spicy.
Kate, do you hate watch the NFL draft that way?
I do. The Baltimore Ravens drafting Patrick Queen last year was the worst moment of my draft. But I will say drafting Chase Claypool was an absolute highlight. We actually, last year, we went to the NFL Combine. We had no business being there, literally whatsoever. But we literally just went to Indy and went to some bars, and we were networking with all of these folks in the NFL, ran into some interesting former head coaches. We had a really fun time, but one of the like most exciting points was just watching Chase Claypool and just absolutely crush it. And a bunch of us were just like arguing at a bar. Should he be a tight end? Should he be a wide receiver? You know what? It doesn't matter because he's a Steeler. He can be whatever he wants to be. And I feel like he made my life a little bit better. I literally screamed. If you heard a scream somewhere around Chase Claypool's pick, probably me.
I like the enthusiasm. Yeah. That's how it should be. That's how it should be on the draft. There's too many people that a pick is made and they're immediately mad about who it is and who they should have picked. Like, there is a honeymoon period between the draft and when these guys actually get on the field. At least be happy during that time, right? Like, once they get on the field, you can be mad. But can't you just assume and kind of trick yourself into believing that you got a good player before that, RJ?
So, Stats, were you like the one person defending Daniel Jones then? Because it, like, based on this logic, it seems like you were the guy that was like, guys, just be cool. Like, they just took him. You have no idea who he's going to be.
I didn't think it was a good pick, but I wasn't screaming from the mountaintop how terrible it was and the Giants are idiots. I kind of enjoyed it because it's an NFC team that I think made a bad pick.
See, that's the difference between you and I is we had a lot of fun with that at Blog on the Boys. needless to say, that was a really, really good time. Yeah, like if you're not like rooting for failure for your division rivals, I don't know, like you're not trying hard enough. You're not salting your steak is really the way I feel. I mean, it's, you know, you got to add that perspective to your life.
Okay, let's look at one more here before we let Kate go. Running backs in round one, over under 0.5.
Oh, I mean, okay, you go ahead. Yeah, like who, what? Did you make this up, Stats?
No, will there be a running back picked in round one? Yes or no is essentially what it's asking.
It is the over, and I think you all know why. It is the Steelers at 24 drafting Najee Harris, but maybe it's not, and maybe we see the Miami Dolphins taking a running back or the New York Jets immediately in front of them. I think everybody knows that Pittsburgh has their eye on Najee Harris. I don't think it's like a crazy thing to think that maybe Miami would take him at 18 or maybe the Jets at 23. I guess I'm just taking it for granted. Apparently I assume that Najee is the first running back available. I've seen Daniel Jeremiah. He's 10 to had Travis Etienne as the first running back off the board. I don't buy that. I think it's at least Pittsburgh or bust, but I think he's too good. And I think he separates himself too far from the other running back prospects in this class that somebody's going to bite on the talent before the end of round one.
What about Arizona? We throw them in the mix? You don't think so?
I think they made the right move with James Conner. I actually, we were doing a podcast yesterday, and researching for that podcast, I fell back in love with James Conner. As a Steelers fan, I've always liked him, but when he's actually been on the field, which has, you know, been 10 to 13 games in any given season, been really productive, including the 2020 season. Leading up to like week 11, he got hurt in game one, but in that span from weeks two to week 11, he was very productive on the football field. He's, you know, good in three down situations. I just think he's a dynamic playmaker, and you play him alongside a guy like Chase Edmonds to maybe take off some of those extra carries like the Steelers love to wear down their running backs. I think Cliff Kingsbury is a little bit more eager to get rotational guys involved like Chase Edmonds. I think that's going to spare some wear and tear on James Conner. And I think that
Chase Claypool is always on the mind.
Oh my God, always on the mind. I think they're going to make a really good 1-2 punch, but I think that was a perfect setup for the Cardinals here because you don't have to utilize a draft pick. They have, you know, needs on the defensive side of the ball. And I mean, they got Conner for zero money. So I think they're out of the conversation for me just based on that one signing. And I think it was a really smart signing because they went out on that trade or that signing. It was what, $1.75 million per year?
I mean, so this brings up a different point for me. Just stats is like, what kind of fan are you? So you're the type of person that like roots for players to have success when they leave the Steelers, I guess. Like, cause I'm not saying like that I necessarily advocate for people that leave the Cowboys to fail, but there is that type of thing that's like, you're dead to me. Like, I don't even know who you are anymore.
So it's, I'm like by nature, I don't know if you guys have picked up on this. I'm just like I'm a really positive person. And by that term, sometimes I am gullible. I'm very skeptical when it comes to the NFL draft and that conversation. But I do root for people's success. Just because it didn't work out for us doesn't mean it might not work out for you and somebody else. I was actually like Antonio Brown. I know there's so many questions about his off the field stuff, but like I was excited for him to win a Super Bowl. And my mother-in-law, good God, she was not. And I like literally I closed the group chat. I was like, I'm not going to get involved in this conversation because I clearly have nothing to contribute to this side of the conversation here. I think it's fun to root for people's success. No,
that's just you're a very kind person, Kate.
You are. Yeah, you are definitely the best person on this show right now.
I promise I'm competitive. I just I don't know. Maybe I need to toughen up. Be real mad next season.
I have never been one to hesitate about fending off all comers when it comes to an argument. And the argument that RJ Ochoa and I had yesterday was
don't twist what I said. Is all I'm saying.
About Julian Edelman. And RJ's having a really hard time because he doesn't know what to do with Julian Edelman. He's making a mountain out of a molehill.
Let me frame it because you're going to botch it. And the way Kate hears it and the way the listener hears it is going to be important. So I understand that the Hall of Fame argument is annoying. And I am not advocating for Julian Edelman as a Hall of Famer. But I think the like scoffing at the idea is a little unfair. My argument is I love and have always loved the idea that, you know, the measurement for some of the Hall of Famer is, could you tell the story of the NFL without them? And you cannot tell the story of the NFL without Julian Edelman. I mean, he's at the very least, you have to acknowledge he's a very unique character in NFL history. He has the second greatest catch ever in Super Bowl history. His contributions came for the greatest dynasty of all time. And he was the Robin to the ultimate Batman in NFL history and Tom Brady for the ultimate, I don't know what Bill Belichick would be in this Batman universe. Maybe Alfred. No, that feels belittling. Commissioner Gordon. Ironically, Commissioner Gordon. And so, I mean, my point is like he has an extremely unique spot in NFL history. I equated him. Okay. I don't know if you've seen Breaking Bad, the television show.
Art.
Have you seen? Well, he's like... He's like Skyler White, Walt's wife on the show. Nobody's favorite character, but like a necessary component to the overall story. And that's Julian Edelman. Like he should have like a spot in some sort of museum is my point.
Yeah, I'm actually, so wait, stats, what is your argument here? Because I think, RJ, you made it perfectly. I'm sorry, stats.
Yeah,
Bobby.
You know what the museum is, RJ? The Patriots Hall of Fame. That's where but like, this isn't hard. I'm going to get into it more after the break. Let me just say RJ is totally wrong for a ton of reasons. And I think your position, RJ, is reflective of, I think, what fans in general do nowadays. So that's what I want to get into. But I'm fine. If you guys are both against me, that's fine.
Let me lay it out this way. But before Kate leaves, and stats be cool. Calvin Johnson, 500 times the receiver that Julian Edelman was, right? And I picked Calvin because stats hates him. But objectively can't deny his greatness. But so we all agree, right? Like Calvin Johnson, far and away a better wide receiver, you know, more justifiable Hall of Famer. Julian Edelman is a more like necessary character in the story of NFL history than Calvin Johnson in the way like we contextualize the playoffs, because like we sort of look at the playoffs as like second seasons, and Calvin Johnson was really absent from them. And so Julian Edelman like lived there. And so that's just it. You can't like ignore it, is my whole point.
He thrived there. Like you really can't tell the story of these Super Bowls without Julian Edelman. And you can't tell the story. He's of course in the Patriots Hall of Fame. He's such a huge part of that narrative. And I don't think like if you're going to send Belichick to the Hall of Fame as a coach, and you're going to send Tom Brady to the NFL as a quarterback, I think Julian Edelman has a pretty big chunk of that pie. Is he flashy? No. Is he a sexy pick for the Hall of Fame? No. But to RJ's point, he is a very big part of the story of modern NFL history.
Okay, let me ask you this last question. I told Stats, if you power ranked the offensive hierarchy of the overall Patriots dynasty, Brady's obviously number one, Gronk's number two. And we're talking within the context of what the Patriots accomplished. Is Edelman not number three? Like who would be number three that would be above Edelman?
I don't think there is anybody. I think it's 100% Edelman. I don't think, because there are so many different moving parts. There have been guys that had short stints with the Patriots who were a part of those runs. But I mean, Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski, they were the constants through that era. I don't think Tom Brady's, not to say that Julian Edelman made Tom Brady, but I do think that the relationships they had on the field, they all made each other better. And I think that's what was so special about this group of players. I'm Team RJ.
Kate forever.
I'm also Kate, fired, aren't I?
Let me say, you are a lovely person. You are a great analyst and a fantastic host. Get out of here. You're totally wrong. And I'm going to explain why after the break.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to The Look Ahead here, part of the SB Nation NFL show. Before we left, we were arguing about Julian Edelman, and you, RJ, and Kate Majuk were just waxing poetic about how great Julian Edelman is. He holds a special... This is not hard, RJ. Here's Julian Edelman's career in a nutshell. An average, above average player in the regular season who had some great moments in the playoffs. That's it. Like, this is not difficult. We have seen these guys before. He's not even the best slot receiver in Patriots history. Come on now. Wes Welker was a billion times better. And by the way, if there's no Wes Welker, there's no Julian Edelman, because that's who the Patriots were trying to replicate when they took Edelman. And by the way, they failed because Welker is a much better player.
I agree with everything you said. I mean, like, again, and ultimately, if I have to choose a side, whether he's a Hall of Famer or not, he's not. And it's not a complicated decision in like the obtuse sense of it. However, he is a necessary component to the story. So that's why, like, I don't find the fact that the conversation happens to be like stupid the way some people do.
No, it's stupid.
And so, like, actually, I want to amend my television analogy. He's not Skyler White. We all know, like, Tom Brady's the face and the superstar. Tom Brady is Vince. He's Vincent Chase, right? Like, of the entourage that is the New England Patriots. Edelman is kind of E, right? Like, that's who he is. Like, he's clearly not Vince. He's clearly only who he is because of Vince. He clearly like needs Vince. His whole like in the show Entourage, he's, if you've never seen Entourage, Vince is an actor, and like the whole Entourage revolves around him, and E is his best friend that is his manager. And so, like, again, literally, like, everything that E does revolves around what Vince does. And so, like, that is who Edelman is. But the show and the whole theme of Entourage would not be what it is without E. And in fact, like, this is an Entourage thing, but like, they specifically wanted Kevin Connolly to play that role because it was so unique. And like, this was an incredibly unique role that Edelman played within the overall Patriots run. And so like,
no, it wasn't. Wes Welker did the exact same role and did it better.
But I think, again, within the scope of what the Patriots have been, and I actually thought Belichick's statement on this was incredible, because he doesn't open up like that, you know, when it comes to just any player or any person. And so like, I do think that, I mean, we've seen the highlights a billion times in the days since he's retired. I mean, we've seen how he truly was this like embodiment of like Belichick's prototypical player. Not that Wes Welker wasn't, but Wes Welker was elite at a very particular thing. And Edelman wasn't. And because he wasn't, he had to be good at a lot of things, and he had to be amendable. I mean, like, that's he was the ultimate, like, I'm just super happy to be a part of this. Right. Like, and there's no like shame in that or anything, but like, that was a necessary role and a necessary juice. I mean, like, he partly, and I don't mean this like by virtue of his talents, but just by virtue of his Edelmanness, boosted Tom Brady. He really did. Like,
that's fine. I'm not denying that he wasn't a good player, but that's what I'm saying. He was a good player, and I don't know why some people are struggling with this. You know, they say that people believe conspiracy theories, RJ, because human beings like big explanations for big events. We can't just have JFK get shot by some random dude. It's got to be an entire government conspiracy, because JFK was beloved by so many people. Our brains don't like small explanations for big events. And when it comes to players in the Super Bowl era, especially recently, who have won a lot of Super Bowls, we don't like saying, hey, this guy's a good player that won a bunch of rings. If you won a bunch of rings for some reason now, we try and elevate you somehow, because our brains don't like saying that average guys can win rings too. And I think that's what's happening with Julian Edelman, is that he has 3 rings, which is awesome. Congratulations. But he's really not that great. Like, never made a Pro Bowl, never made an All-Pro team, never led the league in a single statistical category except for drops, P.S. Like, it's just, it's staggering to me that people are even breathing words of the Hall of Fame with Julian Edelman.
So let me say, first of all, on the Hall of Fame note, that I appreciate your extreme objectivity when it comes to the Hall of Fame, which harkens back to the Calvin Johnson point that we talked about several months ago. Calvin Johnson, like, from a talent perspective, is like maybe the 3rd best wide receiver of all time. And so certainly a Hall of Famer, but if anyone didn't hear, Stats' take was that he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer.
He's not a Hall of Famer at all. He didn't do it for long enough.
Wow. Again, I'm on the hill to Calvin Johnson, literally in the top, easily in the top 5, like, athletically and talent wise, but that's whole different to me. Anyway, so again, like, I agree that Julian Edelman is not a Hall of Famer, but like, I think he, through the unique path that he took, which was unique, it wasn't just this, like, he wasn't Kenny Gant on the 90s Dallas Cowboys. Like, he was unique in the run that they had. And so, like, I think that the uniqueness of it at least, like, has earned the question, right? Like, the question is silly. The question is silly for some people, but like, my point is, like, he's more than like a trivia answer. You know what I mean? Like, he had this really incredible and incredibly unique career for a very incredible team, a very incredible fan base, as the sidekick to the greatest player of all time, under the greatest coach of all time. Like, I agree that all those things also like helped to boost his overall like stock in this capacity, but he's not a Hall of Famer, but, and the answer is he's a Patriots Hall of Famer. Like, that's ultimately the answer, is that, you know, if you're a player like that, you're one of the best players in your team's history. And maybe best is not the right way to put it, but again, I'm not advocating for him to be a Hall of Famer, but I have appreciated the argument that people have made, like, you know, he deserves to have his story told because of what it means and meant to the NFL. And I'm
what
not.
What did it mean to the NFL?
Like, dude, we've been talking about what it meant to the NFL. Here's a sort of soft equal, I think. Not, I still don't agree with this myself, but I am so appreciative that the Pro Football Hall of Fame put the Sables in, right? Like, for a million reasons. They founded NFL Films, and that is essential to the way that we view and love NFL history. Like, to this day, they are the true keepers of the flame, and they deserve to be Hall of Famers and deserve to be for a long time. I think Edelman is interestingly like closer to that category of Hall of Famer than literally everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, the category of, like, you know, contributions to the, like, the story of the NFL.
And oh my God.
I have a complicated, like, emotion about this. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, and I don't, like, have the energy to argue that he is, because I don't believe that he is. But I think he was very unique, and that was all I really wanted to say. Like, I think dismissing it is unfair to the type of career that he had.
I don't think he's unique at all. He was a slot receiver. He did the exact same thing that Wes Welker did. And as far as not being able to tell the story of the NFL without Julian Edelman is not a blip in the history of the NFL. He's nothing. He's insignificant.
So, interestingly, obviously, this our conversation was inspired by the one that you and BLG had on the Oddcast. And you both mentioned Wes Welker and asked if he'd ever won a Super Bowl. Obviously, he didn't.
He has not.
I know, but I think that they are interesting. I've said the word interestingly like six times today, and it's got my mind in a weird spot. But interestingly, they are kind of at the like opposite ends of this particular spectrum. Like Edelman, this average player that had this elite career accomplishment wise, right? Like his resume is you know, dazzled. Or is it bedazzled? That's the word I'm looking for. It's bedazzled. Okay. Whereas Wes Welker, this incredibly elite talent that was undiscovered for a while and you know, had that elite production, that doesn't have any of that. And Wes Welker was literally on the two greatest offenses of all time. He was on the 2007 Patriots and the 2013 Broncos. I mean, the majority of his production came from, you know, the quarterbacks that define our generation. You know, like, it's astounding that, like, I hate to reduce it to luck, but like the luck that they had, you know, at opposite ends of the spectrum in that sense. And it's super. And maybe you could argue it's unfair in the other, like, you know, effect for Edelman that people remember him for like the catch against the Falcons or the touchdown throw against the Ravens in 2014, whatever. It's unfair that people lump Wes Welker into the drop in Super Bowl 46 that he had when Giselle had the comment afterwards and everything like that, because he had like, and that's what I'm saying. Like Wes Welker's career, 500 times the career that Julian Edelman's was, but you know, it's less essential to the story of the NFL. Like Wes Welker's career shines brightly in the story of the NFL. If it was a movie, the 2007 Patriots and the 2013 Broncos are when it really shines. And I mean, I think Julian Edelman is a little bit more implanted in people's minds, I think. But
yeah, because he had great moments in the playoffs, and that's, people remember those things. But I mean, like, so Wes Welker, the Patriots don't win the Super Bowl, so we're not saying no one is saying Wes Welker should be in the Hall of Fame. But if
he has a better case, though, like, to be.
Of course he does.
just getting that out there that I agree with this. That's all I'm saying.
So I think that that Edelman won a lot. He had that moment against the Falcons, like you said, fantastic, amazing, incredible catch. And so we don't like that. We don't like that we can just like forget about Julian Edelman now because he's retired, because he's not going to make the Hall of Fame. So people are trying to elevate it. And I think it's ridiculous.
This is not the best comparison either, but I'm hoping that I can at least get you to move 1%. In a weird way, I don't mean this in totality, but kind of like Robert Horry. You know what I mean? Like a part of a lot of championship teams, a contributor in a lot of sense, a big time contributor, Robert Horry. Robert Horry was a better player than Julian Edelman was. I'm not saying that he wasn't, but like people remember like Robert Horry's shot against the Pistons in 2004, right? Like he was Big Shot Bob. You know what I mean? Like that's, mm-hmm. that's who he was. Like his big moments came in the playoffs. And so like, that's kind of, those are unique people. And Robert Horry, again, a far more worthwhile Hall of Famer in that capacity than Julian Edelman is here. But that's all I'm saying. Like he's a unique person. And it's okay to say that while also saying that he's definitely not a Hall of Famer.
I mean, who's not saying he's unique?
You guys are saying that. You guys are like, this is stupid. I just, you know, wanted to, you know, the week of his retirement, y'all had no respect.
I mean, his story is unique for sure, but that's as far as it goes. Like, and I think it's okay to say it's not knocking Julian Edelman. It's just stating facts plain. By the way, Robert Horry, 7-time NBA champion. I think Horry had more great playoff moments than Edelman, to be honest with you.
Agreed.
Also, not a Hall of Famer.
I have another question for you. My last question on this. Whose story is more essential to the NFL? The way I frame this to you is if Michael McCambridge rewrote America's Game, the best book on NFL history there is, but if he rewrote it, and who is more likely to be included, Julian Edelman or Nick Foles?
Nick Foles, a billion percent.
I disagree.
He won the Super Bowl MVP.
The reason that is so elevated is because of who it came against. And by the way, that was the one Super Bowl in the latter half of the Patriots run that Julian Edelman missed. So imagine if Julian Edelman had played in that game.
Well, Brady threw for like 500 yards in that game, so I don't think it would have mattered that much.
I'm joking that, but
I don't understand what people that say you can't tell the story of the NFL without this guy are making that argument because they have no other possible argument. You can't tell the story of the NFL without David Tyree. Should he be in the Hall of Fame? No. Like, come on now.
No, but like, so to that point, there is a unique box, right? Of, you know, like everyone's got like a box or a bin where they keep like unique things. Like, I don't think Edelman is quite like Nick Foles and David Tyree are in the same box generally, right? Julian Edelman's not quite in that box, but he's like the little box you put on top of the bin. You know what I mean? That's like on that shelf or whatever. He's in that sector, but not quite in that box.
I usually am down to ride with you on whatever weird analogy you want to make. That one, I can't go with you on that.
Who else is in this department here? Like these unique contributions in that sense.
There are guys, but like just think
Larry Brown, the Cowboys corner, they won Super Bowl MVP in Super Bowl 30.
Like, yeah, I get, there are a lot of weird super. Marlon Jackson, I think, won a Super Bowl MVP for the Buccaneers. I think like there are a lot of weird Super Bowl MVPs like that. And Edelman Edelman is a Super Bowl MVP, and he deserves credit for that. But that's it. Like, good player, good playoff moments. Have a good life. That's all I'm saying. We could be done with Julian Edelman.
All I'm saying is even that was absent on the Oddcast. So I'm glad I fought for a little bit of love here. You know, I just want peace, love, and harmony, which is why we had Kate on. And let's not forget who Kate agreed with here.
That's fine. I have no problem. Let me tell you a quick story really, really quickly. So before my wife and I got married, we had to do the pre-Cana because we got married in a church. So you have to do this, like, there's like requirements you have to do before you get married. And one of them was like a class about marriage that we had to go to. And so they asked everybody a question in the class of, is it your responsibility to make sure your partner grows throughout your life? And depending on your answer, you had to go to a different corner of the room. Well, when that question came up, everyone in the class literally said, yes, I was the only one in the entire room standing in the opposite corner. And I said, no. And let me tell you, I was quite comfortable with it. I am fine living in that space.
Yeah. So you've got your own box. Julian Edelman's got his own box. Like everybody's got their own particular boxes and spaces. If for what it's worth, you know, I'm your partner here. I feel like you've helped me grow. So, you know, you have accomplished that, whether intentional or not, you know, you deserve a kudos there.
I am glad it happened. I'm not saying it's my job to make it happen.
Well,
there you go.
You know, I just want to thank you, Stats, for the great show, for the great job you always do, for the appreciation you clearly have of Julian Edelman. I want to thank you for the appreciation that you would have had if Julian Edelman had joined the 49ers like people thought he would many moons ago. Had that happened, you would certainly be arguing that he is without question a Hall of Famer. I thought about in trying to upset you. This would have been purely a lie and only to upset you, saying he was just like Ronnie Lott in NFL history. But I didn't want to have that argument.
I
was only trying to hurt you. But this was all about you today. It's clearly noted at the very beginning. So congratulations to you, Bobby G.
I'm going to end it there before I say something I'm going to regret. Anyway, rate, review, subscribe. We'll talk to you next week.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast, and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to The Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.